The following words are from the mouth of Moses, spoken to his people in the desert before entering Canaan, the promised land. For the Lord your God has blessed you in all the work of your hands. He knows you're going through the great wilderness. These 40 years, the Lord your God has been with you. You have lacked nothing. The Israelites have spent 40 years in the desert, and they're at the doorstep of their new home. But before they can enter and settle down, there will be war. The story here is picking up from the end of the book of Numbers. Moses is giving a lengthy speech, bolstering morale, assuring unity and obedience before they begin what could be a brutal fight. Moses will not be going with them, as God has decided that he will die before they enter Canaan. And Moses wants above all else for his people to remember that God has guided and protected them for 40 years. You can tell from the verses just before this pronouncement by Moses how carefully God has guided the Israelites. Then the Lord said to me, "You have been traveling around this mountain country long enough. Turn northward and command the people. You are to pass through the territory of your brothers, the people of Esau, who live in Seir, and they will be afraid of you. So be careful. You shall purchase food from them with money that you may eat, and you shall also buy water from them with money that you may drink." It has been a tremendous journey, but now more than ever, they must remember that God deserves their absolute, unwavering trust. Even though they have been in the most inhospitable environment imaginable, they have had food and water, and their population has multiplied. God has not forgotten the promise of land to live on, a promise that is a core aspect of God's covenant with the Israelites. This promise is about to be met, but the Israelites must remain strong and obedient to their God. Now, as an aside, many people believe, and I tend to support this, that the invasion of Canaan was probably not all that bloody, that the escapees from Egypt merged with the Canaanite population, and the Israelites emerged from that combined population. But this is a faith story, so let's accept it as it is written. I'm going to switch gears. My sister Mary was 4 years ahead of me in school. She was and is enormously gifted intellectually. As a student, I walked in her footsteps. She was my role model in high school. I went to the same college as she did. She got an undergraduate degree in chemistry and a PhD in biochemistry. I eventually got an undergraduate degree in mathematics and a PhD in computer science. She became a professor. I became a professor. I always looked up at her in awe of her powerful mind. When Mary was in high school and I was in grammar school, she applied to be a foreign exchange student. As I recall, there was a period of time when she knew she was going to go somewhere, but she had not yet been given her assignment, the country in which she would be studying. Wherever that was, she would go there and live with a family, and she would attend school with students in that nation. I'm going to switch gears yet again. Not long before my sister and I were born, my father was a young man serving as a sergeant in the U.S. Marines in World War II. My father was a sharpshooter. He started out in the Army Air Corps and had been shipped to England to do training runs over the English Channel. The war was raging, however, and he was itching to get into combat. There was a need for sharpshooters in the Pacific. So, He was transferred to the Marines, was made a sergeant, and was put in charge of a unit. But when his unit landed on Guadalcanal, they had no proper maps of the island. They were frequently lost. There was literally unbearable heat. They carried only enough food for a handful of days and just a single canteen each. They quickly ran out of food. Marines began losing weight. At one point, my father and his men were cut off from the rest of the Marines. They were starving to death, even as they found themselves in intense firefights. My father was protective of his men, and so he decided that he had to get them food. At night, he would slip out, find a Japanese straggler, and kill him. He would steal the soldier's rice pouch and take it back to his men. They survived entirely on rice my father took from Japanese soldiers. Eventually, they found their way back to the rest of the Marine units. My father fought in battle, killed Japanese soldiers with his rifle and his long-barreled 38. He wanted very badly to help his generation annihilate the evil force that was trying to take over much of the world. He was proud to be a Marine. After the war, my father met my mother. He was still a Marine and still wearing a uniform, despite having to walk with a cane from having been hit with shrapnel on some other island. He was awarded a Purple Heart for that. For the rest of his life, because he had metal inside him, he would grunt whenever he climbed behind the steering wheel of a car. One day when my parents were getting serious about each other, my mother decided to make a special treat for my father. So when he got to her place, she fed him a nice meal, and then after dinner, she put in front of him a special dessert she had made, rice pudding. My father froze, and as my mother described it to me many years later, he seemed catatonic for at least a full minute. He paled. He shook. He asked her in a whisper to please take the rice away. She did so. It was a couple of months before he could explain why he couldn't bear the sight of rice. The one thing we never ate in our household was rice. No rice, not a grain of it in the house, ever. Back to my sister. One day the big letter came in the mail. One of us brought it into the house and called to my sister. She was about to learn what nation she was going to. Mind you, this wasn't really that long after World War II, just a couple of decades. We all stood around Mary as she opened it. Mary read the name of the country, Japan. I remember looking over at my father to see how he would respond. He rarely talked about the war. He was very calm, a very gentle man. He looked passive for a moment with no expression. We were all silent. Slowly he nodded. He smiled. I don't remember if he said this to me at that moment or whether he said it to me later, but my father said something like this. It's beautiful. We fought that war. I killed all those Japanese, and now my daughter is going to study there. This is how God wants wars to end. They're our friends now. The Israelites spent a generation in the desert. Those who were alive when they started out from Egypt were not the ones who arrived in Canaan, but the entire time God guided them, the entire time they were within the sanctuary of God. My father wasn't broken by the war. He never lost his humanity, his decency. He never became angry or bitter. He did not see the Japanese people as the enemy, as evil, as people he still wanted to kill. This is how we live when we accept the protection of God's sanctuary. That sanctuary is everywhere, and within it is the protection and guidance of God. If we willingly live within that sanctuary, we will always find ourselves in a beautiful place. It might take a generation to get there, like it took the Israelites in the desert, and like it took my father, but we will make it. To continue to grow in your faith, you find yourself having to do two things. First, you must always be ready to change something about yourself. We are never perfect, and there is always something corrupt within us. The second thing is that we must be proactive about our faith. We don't wait for opportunities to drop in our laps. We take advantage of circumstances that allow us to live like Christ. As for the first thing, sometimes the changes we have to make in ourselves are, in a sense, non-changes. We must resist the temptation to become something we should not be. We have to fight to maintain a certain level of innocence. My father refused to become hateful. He held no ill will toward Japan nor the people of Japan. He wasn't still fighting the war in his mind. As for the second thing, sometimes the proactive things we need to do to live our faith are simple and are also, in a sense, non-actions. My father smiled and gently welcomed the news that his daughter would study in Japan. He didn't try to stop my sister from going there. He knew that to practice his faith, he had to do what he had done all his life, and that was to obey God's command to be loving of all people. He saw my sister's assignment to go to Japan as a sign from God, reminding him that he should love without bias. In the beginning of Deuteronomy, where the passage I read comes from, we learn that the unity among the 12 tribes of Israel will dramatically impact whether they are successful in claiming the promised land. Again, the invasion of Canaan may be a faith story, and it might well not be true history. But whether this story is literal or an allegory, it tells us that when bad things happen, when we are up against terrible challenges, God will be with us. We have a sanctuary in church, which symbolizes the sanctuary that God provides for us everywhere. It is powerful symbolism that God protected the Israelites for 40 years in the desert, at a time when survival there was extremely difficult. A major theme that comes through the early part of Deuteronomy is that the Israelites don't know what will happen. They are stepping into something scary. As it turns out, they will not be warmly received by the residents of Canaan. As the story goes, many mighty armies reside there, and they will unify and rise up against the Israelites. God asks two things of the Israelites. He wants them to not lose their faith in God, to not let what they were about to face change their view of the sanctuary provided by God. They were to maintain their trust in God. And second, God wanted them to continue to be proactive in their faith, as they had been during their long journey in the desert. Yes, their faith had at times wavered strongly in the desert, but all in all, they listened to God, and now they were to continue to do as God commanded. One of the biggest successes we can feel as people of faith is when we refuse to let ourselves be made vengeful, cynical, or hurtful, and when we continue to let God lead us despite what happens in our lives. We live in a sanctuary that is provided to us no matter where we go, no matter what we do, no matter what happens to us. All we have to do is accept the protection of that sanctuary, fight to remain as innocent as possible, and continue to let the teachings of Christ drive our daily behavior. If we do those things, we will find that in the end, after we have wandered far and wide, after we have been through scary times, we will emerge in the promised land with God's sanctuary still wrapped around us. But yes, sometimes God waits before speaking to us. God can wait an entire generation. There is powerful evidence that the Canaanites survived, that they were not wiped out, and that in fact they are perhaps the ancestors of the Jews and the Arabs. So yes, the political division between Israelites and Canaanites is mirrored today by the enmity between Jews and Arabs. I do hope that one day the Arabs and the Jews in the Middle East will become deep friends. What we must do as people of faith is remember that God wants every enemy of ours to become our friend. And so why not just start out by having them be our friend in the first place?